This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, a cooking store located at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. You can find Feast Your Ears as well as lots of other great shows on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes. Follow me on Instagram at TheFoodBaller. This is episode 26 of Feast Your Ears, and today, which is in fact a Tuesday, it's not a Wednesday, we're pre-recording this show, it's going to air later. In the studio with me today is Holly Davidson, who is an actress, trainer, and author of a new book called Nourish that she wrote with her sister and another friend of theirs. So thank you, Holly, for joining me today.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
So when you meet somebody, invariably they ask the "what do you do?" question. And what do you say when you meet somebody?
Now I'm a personal trainer.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm a personal trainer, and an author is something that was fun to do, but whether or not I'd ever write another book, I don't know. This is my baby.
Got it. So you don't self-describe at the moment as an author. You
no.
You have been an author.
Yes, exactly.
Because the book is finished.
Yeah.
So you recently moved to New York from London, right?
Yeah.
What brought you to New York?
My fiance.
Oh.
That's a good reason.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you have a pending wedding?
We do, yeah.
Do you have a date set?
2017. We're keeping it open.
Cool. Great. Awesome. And what were you doing in London? Were you also a personal trainer there before you moved here?
Yeah. I've been a personal trainer for 7 years now. And it's my love. It's my true love. And that's why the book came from that. It came from all my experiences, all my knowledge of food, people, and there's people coming in here now. It's so funny.
Coming
to look. And I guess, you know, as you're personal training and you're learning from other people and their experiences and what works and what doesn't work for them, whether it's food related or exercise related, I had all this stuff, and I just wanted to put it somewhere and wanted it to be in one place. And writing a book just seemed the best place and the best way to do it.
So how did the book actually come about? Was it your brainchild and you sort of got your sister to come along and your friend to come along with it?
Yeah, I mean, it was me, I think, over a couple of years talking to my sister and saying, God, I've got all these great ideas. And she was like, oh, I'd love to write a book too. I've got some ideas. And then I think it's kind of, writing a book, it can be quite daunting.
I know that well. I'm in the middle of it right now.
Okay, yeah. I mean, and so having the support of my sister and a friend and us all saying, let's do this together, was a really uniting and positive thing. So it kind of gave us all the confidence to do it. It can be quite an isolated thing to do, I think, on your own. And having the support of each other, it made it easier and it made it less of a big thing. And we all worked together to kind of bring the book into place. So
great. Yeah. And so the book is called Nourish, Mind, Body, and Soul. And it was written by Amber Rose, Sadie Frost, and Holly Davidson. Sadie's your sister.
Yeah, right? Sadie's my sister.
And the book is sort of split into three sections. Amber has a section, Sadie has a section, and Holly has a section. Can you tell me about how the sections kind of broke out?
Sure. I mean, we kind of wanted to focus on our expertise, even though a lot of, you know, we've kind of, I love food, but Amber, she's a chef. It was her expertise. So obviously, you know, writing about food for her and recipes came completely naturally. So each of our sections is focused on our expertise.
Great. And then so Sadie's section is more about sort of mental work.
Yeah. So she's focusing on, well, probably I'd say the mind
sure.
part. So it's there's about breathing, yoga, and it kind of goes into as well sleep and stress, and also just being a busy mum, working, being a woman trying to kind of juggle a million things, and how certain things in her life have helped, certain tools have helped her. So it is more of a, it's a mindset, and speaking about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, the book is, I think the book is beautiful. It doesn't have a dust jacket, which is one of my personal pet peeves.
Oh, really?
About books. I hate the books with dust jackets. I hope that my book doesn't have a dust jacket. The publisher has told me it won't, but they can always change their mind.
Okay,
point.
Yeah.
Because I just find that dust jackets always tear, especially on a book you're going to use in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You're going to end up ripping it or getting it dirty, and so why bother?
And it looks, and it looks a bit messy, and then yeah. You're kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. But the book is beautiful, and it definitely, you know, the photographs show off the fact that the three of you are close.
Yeah.
Which I think is really, you know, is really part of it. And the idea that you do need to kind of take care of all of these things. You do need to take care of your mind, your body, and your soul. Kind of how do you do that in a holistic way where it's not just about how you eat? I mean, there are a lot of books about eating for health, or a lot of books about working out for health, or a lot of books about mindfulness. And so how do you kind of bring all of those things into one?
And that's what we wanted. We wanted a book that was, that you could pick up and look at beautiful pictures of food and be inspired. You could also then find out certain things, and every time you pick it up, you're going to learn something new. And it looks great on the coffee table, and it doesn't, you know, it's something for everybody of all ages. You know, it's not specifically to, honed into anybody, any age. So we wanted everyone that, you know, could learn something from it. And we're really proud of the book.
You talk in the book about people needing to fall in love with exercise.
Yes.
How do you get people to do that as a personal trainer?
I think it's down to the person and finding out what they love, what they enjoy doing. I think a lot of, you know, there's a lot of exercise out there, and everyone thinks it's for everybody, and it's not. You know what, you know, somebody might love running, and somebody might love playing squash.
Right.
So it's finding what they enjoy, and whether it's, you know, being outdoors or indoors, or so you kind of really kind of get to know somebody's personality, and that's the key. And you kind of, have they tried certain things, and do they prefer things that are high impact or low impact? And that you just run through a lot of questions. And I think once you find things that are personal to that person and they enjoy doing, they probably actually are exercising in ways that they haven't realized is exercise because they're enjoying it. Exercise, a lot of people think, is a chore or, you know, or something they shouldn't like. And that's not the case. So it's,
I think it changes over time, too. I, as a kid, hated gym class. I wasn't really, you know, I did team sports, but didn't find them compelling or exciting or fun, particularly. And then, you know, it wasn't until I was in my 30s that I actually started running. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember why. I think I just did. I was like, I have to do some kind of exercising. I swam for exercise for a long time. And the thing I really used to love about that is that it gave me an hour where nobody could reach me.
Yeah.
Because I was underwater. And so it was very easy to get away, and I had a job where I could swim in the middle of the day. So I would go to the pool, be away from the office. Nobody could find me for an hour. I had my alone time. It was great. And then I think I sort of discovered that with running. And then it became a time that I looked forward to because it was a time to listen to podcasts, ultimately, and learn about things that I was interested in, because it was also hard, you know, and I felt like I was able to make a double, you know, double use of the time where I was exercising, but I was also exercising my mind because I found the running itself not particularly like mentally stimulating.
Yeah, well, that's you know, for you it was kind of great because you felt like, you know, you weren't running. you're in your world and you're like, oh, I've just done a run and it's done. And I think, and it's also, you know, convenience and how it fits into your life. You know, if you've got to travel 2 hours to get to a class and it's stressing you out, then that's not going to be something you can keep up. So you want it to, you know, work in your life, and things change, you know, life changes. So you can't be constantly thinking, oh, this is the thing for me, and it's always been what I do. And sometimes it may change. So.
Yeah, I think I'm personally in a moment where I have to find something else.
Yeah.
Due to other sort of outside influences on my life. I now have 2 children who are young. I have a dog, I have a business. I have, you know, all of these other things that take up little bits of time that I don't have an hour to go running four times a week at the moment.
Yeah.
So I have to find something else that fits into my schedule that I can kind of make the time to do it.
Yeah.
Perhaps after the show, I'll ask you for suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely. We will.
There's a piece in the book about the voices in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually don't remember if that's in your part or if it's in...
It's in my part.
It's in your part,
yeah.
About the voices in your head. So, you know, that I also think is something that's really valuable. And I was thinking about that this morning as I was preparing for the show and thinking about that. I find it's sometimes the same voice, right? I had this conversation. My six-year-old daughter, after seeing Star Wars for the first time, started talking to me about the voices in the head because Luke hears Obi-Wan in his head when he's flying at the end of the movie. And she said, "Dad, I have voices in my head." And she started to say that they were her grandma and these other things. It was very, you know, it's very sweet, but it was really interesting to see her kind of internalize that and to think about what these voices in her head were saying. And, you know, we all have them, right? And I think about that a lot. I mean, I think that what I was thinking about this morning related to it is that it's the same voice that says, "Don't go to the gym," that also says, "Oh, that was really fun."
Oh yeah.
When you're done with it. And I think it's important to sort of keep that in mind. I've been getting up really early every morning to have time alone to write and work on my book. And some mornings when that alarm goes off, I just like roll over in bed and I think, "God, I can't get up. I need another hour of sleep." And then when I do get up and I get a bunch done before anybody in the house is awake and it's quiet and I have sort of my time, it's the same voice that's saying, "God, that was great. We got to do that again tomorrow."
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I think it is, it's kind of when you have those two voices, is being able to listen to both and being able to kind of pat yourself on the back when you have done well and not give yourself too much of a hard time when the voice is, you know.
Right.
You know,
because tomorrow's another day and you can.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's so many pressures in life. If, you know, if the voice is a big pressure in your life, then it's not a nice place to be in that head sometimes. So, yeah.
Is there anything that you miss about London so far? How long have you been in New York?
Oh, well, I've only been here for just over a month.
Okay.
So I miss... Well, my family. I'm a massive, I look very close to my family. I've got four sisters, lots of nieces and nephews, and family time
is... I have children, I can't even imagine. I have two, and I feel like it's hard enough to manage all the stuff and the timing, and they're young. I mean, I don't even, you know, but having five.
Yeah, all girls as well.
Wow.
Just,
did your family drive a truck? I mean, how did you guys get around?
There's a big age gap, actually, between the eldest and the youngest. So by the time, my youngest sister was born, the eldest was moving out, so my mom timed it very well.
Got it.
But yeah, obviously miss family. Not really missing the weather. The weather is something to miss, but that is kind of pretty similar here at the moment. And my clients, I had great relationships with all my clients when I was working. Personal training obviously is very personal, and they felt like family to me too. So, but you know, there's so much going on in New York, so many great things and experiences, and you know, my fiance's here and being with him's lovely. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a payoff, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, you've traded one giant metropolis for another, so it's not, you know, I have to imagine it's not, it would be very different if you'd moved to a very rural area or something. The contrast would be big, but you're in a city from a city. And
exactly. Yeah. And everyone doesn't feel that far away. I mean, London doesn't feel that far away.
Right.
So it's it's been really fun so far.
We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about, I want to hear more about your childhood and growing up in the country.
Cool.
Just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, and today I'm speaking with Holly Davidson about being a personal trainer and her new book, Nourish, that is out now, published by Kyle Books.
Yeah.
So, Holly, you moved here to New York recently from London, but actually grew up as a child in the countryside.
Yes.
In England, right?
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
Shropshire. So it's kind of on the border of the Midlands and Wales. In your typical kind of rolling hills, a little black and white cottage with a stream and a waterfall.
So exactly like we would imagine as Americans when someone says the English countryside.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I took my fiancé to see it, and he thought it looked like a hobbit house. That's how he described it. So, yeah, it's very, very picturesque and quaint, yeah.
And growing up there, what did your family eat? What were your regular...
We had shops, so we could... No, I mean, we did have a massive vegetable garden, so there was a lot of...
That's more what I was getting
at. Yeah,
I'm curious to know sort of how, you know, everybody has a different kind of take, I think, on how their family grew up and what they were eating. And so, you know, I guess to extrapolate on my assumption as an American, right, I imagine there being lamb and I imagine there being cows grazing on these green hills and vegetables and all of that.
Yeah. So I was woken up by bleating lambs but we grew our own vegetables and had chickens and kind of had a little bit of a small hold. So tried to use the land as much as we could. And then you'd have farms locally around to get fresh produce from, as well as, you know, locally sourced things from the shops close by. But I remember, I have so many amazing memories from being in the garden and, you know, picking vegetables and digging and just, it was really refreshing and lovely. I think you don't really realize how privileged and lucky to experience that as a child until you grow up, and just being aware of where vegetables come from,
right,
and how long they take to grow and what the process is and the kind of, you know, the love and the taste afterwards when you've been a part of growing something, digging it up and eating it. The taste is something I can't explain, and it's kind of I feel really humble and lucky to have had that in my life.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that having your hands in that, and you mentioned not sort of understanding how lucky you were, and I mean, because as a kid, everything is your reality.
Yeah. Right?
So you don't have a concept of other people's reality until you start to meet people when you grow up. And for me, it was when I went to college, and I realized that like not everybody had a dad who did a lot of cooking, or not everybody, you know, had a vegetable garden growing up and sort of had these experiences, or, you know, not everybody's parents slammed on the brakes every time there was a farm stand where we could buy fresh produce when we were driving somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you a vegetarian?
I am.
And I believe in the book you talk about how you were a vegetarian you've been a vegetarian for a long time, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you were healthy.
No.
At a certain point. And
no.
I think that's an important distinction to sort of talk about. I think there's a lot of things that I see written and headlines and about, you know, fitness and eating less meat and being vegetarian. And, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that just being a vegetarian doesn't necessarily equate with health.
Yeah.
Right?
I think you assume being a vegetarian, you eat an array of vegetables, and it's enriched with all this lovely fresh, you know, fruit, and it's not the case at all. I think, you know, when I left home and I was, you know, a teenager in London, without that around me, it was very easy to have frozen meals and things that were convenience, and kind of lost what, you know, everything that, you know, you rebel, you kind of, you know, it's easy to get those kind of foods. And I found that I was actually feeling pretty unwell from, you know, I think maybe a few frozen peas on the side would be enough.
Right.
and it was, you know, a lot of frozen stuff. And I began to get coughs and colds and flus and feeling pretty run down and couldn't quite work out what it was. And I, you know, at 20 years old, you don't realize that it could be the food you're eating. And that's when I kind of started looking at health in detail, nutrition, and really started looking at what I'm getting from these foods and what I wasn't getting from these foods. And that's kind of, you know, enlightened a passion in me, as well as obviously personal training. I mean, nutrition is key.
Right. I mean, my guest last week, is a dancer.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about what is required for her and sort of how, you know, her life and her activity needs don't fit into the sort of like ideal of three meals a day that we're all fed, which most people probably don't either. But, you know, we sort of have this ideal of like, oh, you have breakfast, you have lunch in the middle of the day, you have dinner, and here are the things that are the standard components of those meals.
Yeah.
And, you know, for by and large, for most people, I think if you were to take a very close look at what your body needs based on your activity level, it probably wouldn't fit into those structures.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's coming back to whether it's exercise or food, we kind of say, this is how you should be. This is the one way. And it's not for everybody, you know. So you have to kind of do what's right for you.
Yeah. I was a vegan sort of de facto for a while in college because I lived in an apartment with a bunch of people who were vegan, who were probably the most unhealthy people that I've ever lived with or known. I mean, we were in our 20s, of course, but, you know, I mean, I think that for most of the people in that house, you know, a bagel with peanut butter on it was like a meal.
Yeah.
And that was it. And again, I mean, same thing. I had grown up cooking a little bit and was sort of getting interested in cooking at that point. So I was starting to make things with fresh vegetables, but everybody in the house was just eating like peanut butter.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. So yeah, being vegetarian now, I mean, it's obviously having the understanding of what I really need, and also being lucky to be able to get such a variety of foods all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not that it's easy. You still have to, you know, you have to prepare. It's all about preparation, because I love cooking. It's not a problem, but it is. It's your I feel like I'm, you know, everything's fresh. So you're always cooking. I never would buy anything ready made ever.
Right. I mean, noticing the effect of those preservatives and other things on your body is something that I've noticed. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian, but we only source meat from sources that we really feel are responsible and that we know where they're coming from for the Brooklyn Kitchen. And when I go to a friend's house or I, you know, around the holidays, if I go to family friends' houses and I have a really hard time eating the meat, and I feel like kind of a jerk if I say, well, where's this from? And I don't mean to be a jerk about it, but if they're buying conventional meat, I can't eat it, because if I eat it, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
And I know that it's a side effect of the hormones and antibiotics and other things in it that I can't exactly put my finger on it. And it's very hard to explain that to someone who, you know, is trying to be nice to you and invite you to. So I often won't ask. I'll just put it on my plate.
Yeah.
But then they're sort of like, well, do you want more? Why aren't you eating? You know, it's sort of like this thing. Or didn't you try the ham? And I'm like, yeah, but it came from Smithfield ham, and I know what goes into that, and I know how those pigs were raised, and I just can't eat it.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, the more you learn, obviously you can make better choices, but then obviously you also know what is going on with some of these foods that we're eating, where they've come from, what is the pesticides in them, and it's quite scary. So it kind of, it's, you know, it's, it has its pros and its cons, knowing so much about all these things. it can be kind of difficult going out for dinner sometimes.
And then sometimes, I mean, with kids, like all my children, sometimes one is macaroni and cheese that's bright orange. And I mean, I feed that to them because that's what they want to eat, and that's fine. You know, they'll grow up to be great people anyway. I think they'll be okay. We all turned out okay, and we ate a lot of crap. So
Exactly.
Would you say that you have a favorite thing to cook?
Ooh, a favorite thing to cook. I never follow recipes. I'm one of these people who will open the fridge and there'll be three things in there, and I manage to like make dinner for 10. So when it comes to kind of, I probably wouldn't be able to tell you what it was, but it was great. You know, because there's no recipe. So it just kind of just whatever happens on the day. And I love kind of, I'll see a recipe or I'll be out and I'll see something and I'll go home and just try and copy it because I like the sound of it. So I'm always kind of coming up with things myself. So yeah.
And you mentioned I, in the questionnaire that I sent you before the show that you like dinner parties.
Yes.
What did you serve at your last dinner party?
Last dinner party was, homemade sushi. I don't eat fish, but I still obviously, you know, respect people who do eat meat and fish. So, and then I'm big on salads, so a nice big quinoa salad, a nice mixed bean salad. And I like it so there's loads of things on the table, loads of different flavors, loads of variety, and then everyone can kind of just pick and grab and just share. And that's it's all about sharing food rather than a big plate in front of you. I like people being able to just kind of dig into a big table of tastes.
sounds good. Do you have any events coming up or anything that you want to sort of mention on the show?
Nothing specific. Obviously, you know, I'm promoting Nourish, which is really exciting right now. Doing my personal training and enjoying New York.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming into spring, which I think is the nicest season in New York.
Yeah.
So the leaves will start to come out soon. This morning, walking my daughter to school, we saw the very, very first daffodil starting to bloom. So
lots of hiking and outdoors. Yeah. So I love the outdoors. So.
Well, thanks, Holly. It's been a real pleasure today to have you on Feast Your Ears. Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears today. And a big thank you to Kristen Baylor, who's my producer, and David Tadashore for engineering today. Please take a moment to like the show on Facebook and iTunes and follow us on Instagram.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.